fished and dodged crocodiles, while others raised a variety of crops. The city grew for no obvious reason, beyond its being the last viable landing before the river lost itself in the pestilential delta swamps, in those days not yet inhabited by the Nuangbo. Trade from upriver continued overland, to all the great kingdoms of the south. Not a one of those was mentioned by name. Taglios began as a tributary of Baladil-Tyla, a city great in oral histories and no longer in existence. It is sometimes associated with some really ancient ruins outside the village of Videha, which itself is associated with the intellectual achievements of Acuras Empire, and is the center of ruins of another sort entirely. Baladil-Tyla was the birthplace of Radranak, the warrior king who nearly exterminated the deceivers in antiquity, and who harried the handful of survivors into burying their sacred texts, the books of the dead, in that same cavern where Murgan now lay entombed with all the old men in their cobwebs of ice. Not all this was information from the book I was reading. As I went, I made connections with things I had read or heard elsewhere. This was very exciting stuff for me. Here was an answer for Goblin. The princes of Taglios could not be kings because they honored as their sovereigns the kings of Nanda, who raised them up. Of course, Nanda was no more, and Goblin would want to know why. In that case, the Taglian princes could not just crown themselves. There were plenty of precedents. From the looks of the history of the centuries before the coming of the Black Company, that had been the favorite pastime of anybody who could get three or four men to follow him around. I overcame a powerful urge to rush ahead and look for the era when the free companies of Katavar exploded upon the world. What had happened before that would help explain what had happened when they did. Chapter 13. A sudden startled thrill ran through me. I was not alone anymore. A long time had passed. The sun had swung several hours across the sky. The quality of the light within the library had changed. It had become a much paler version of its morning self. Presumably the clouds had passed away. I did not jump or, I hope, show any immediate outward reaction, but I did have to respond visibly to my awareness of the presence of whoever was standing behind me. Perhaps it was his breath that alerted me. The curry and garlic were strong. Certainly I never heard a sound. I brought my heartbeat under control, smoothed my features, turned. The master of the library, my boss, Surendranath Santaraksita, met my gaze.
"Durabi, I believe you are reading."
At the library, they know me as Durabi Day Banerjai, an honorable name. A man of that name died beside me in a skirmish near the Dhaka woods a long time ago. He did not need it anymore, and I would do it no harm. I did not speak. The truth would be hard to deny if the master had been there long. I was halfway through the book, which was of the bound sort and contained no illustrations whatsoever, not even one tantric passage.
"I have been watching you for some time, Durabi. Your interest and skill are both evident. It's clear that you read better than most of my copyists. Yet it's equally obvious